The headlines may fade away, but the aftermath of school shootings continue. Suicide, PTSD, communities being torn apart are the major storylines months, even years later. Then there is New Zealand. Let's bust some pencils.
This is Busted Pencils Radio, fully leaded education talk with Dr. Tim Slecker. Here's what's trending in education news.
From thedailybeast.com, what happens to those who survive school shootings? And in a related article from AP News, linked by pain, two school massacre survivors and dad kill themselves.
Horrible week, Bonnie.
This, I sent you an article and went, oh my gosh, did you see this?
Yeah.
Right after you sent me one saying, oh my gosh, did you
right,
see
this? Right. I sent you the article about Sydney, who's the student from Parkland who killed themselves, a survivor of the Parkland shootings that happened almost, you know, a little bit over a year. It was Valentine's Day last year.
Oh, yeah.
So
right.
It's a year and a month ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this is horrible. And then you throw back the story of the father from Newtown, the Sandy Hook shootings.
Right.
And then throughout that, though, during the weekend, another student survivor at Parkland killed themselves, too. So three survivors of mass school shootings over the period of 4 days committed suicide. And so we're looking at these two articles, and the reason I wanted to bring them together is because they intersect in different ways. And so, but the first one, the question is that, so if this is happening, what are we doing about it? It's a good question, right? Because what happens typically in these stories, I think that people have is that the school shooting happens, the concert from Las Vegas shooting happens, you name it, and the Florida dancing, and we move on.
Right.
Okay.
We're almost waiting for the next news story.
We were waiting for the Mueller report or something inconsequential. The reality is that life goes on, but as life goes on, it's really crappy. And in fact, we look at real issues because of violence. And one of the articles talks about the neuroscience mm-hmm. here of being witness to such violence and how it actually does physical damage, particularly to adolescent brains as they're developing, to see such violence. And then the occurrence of post-traumatic stress disorder. Right. Which typically we relate that to veterans.
Yes,
veterans
totally.
Who've been in war scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but if you read this, the psychologists, these kids were in war. They were in war.
Yeah.
So the idea is no different. So they are suffering from post-traumatic stress. And I'm really concerned, though, about this when you look deeply, because you and I also went through this. We're like, okay, we can't even remember naming them, right?
No,
because we definitely have that first benchmark or that idea being Columbine, right?
You remember it. You know it's in Colorado. You know it was 97, I believe.
Yeah.
And after that, I told you, I'm like, I'm embarrassed to say, you named the schools. And I'm like, oh, wait, when was that?
Where was that one? Where was Newtown? Oh, that was four. Wait, Newtown was 4 years ago? Sandy Hook? You know, and Parkland. Yeah, Parkland now 13 months ago.
Yeah.
Right? And they bleed together. But there's this one of the statistics. So since Columbine, there are over 150,000 survivors of school shootings.
That's a lot. That's a city.
Right.
That's
we were
city.
Talking about that, right? You know, here we are in Madison, Wisconsin. Take away the college.
Right. And that's what you have.
And that's what you have. So that's how many people are affected by a school shooting. And so what does that mean? For some people, it's a daily kind of nuisance. But for others, it's this constant drag, this constant pain, this constant reminder. When you look at the father from Newtown in some of the interviews that he gave over the last 4 years as he really worked hard. This is the other thing, right, too, because they have to get inspired. So this guy was a neuropharmacologist and put all of his money and time dedicated to his daughter's death into researching the brain to see if there was a way to prevent violence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, went around all the country talking, but when you have him talk about the interviews, though, about what happened that day, he's like, you're reminded of it constantly. There was one interview that he did that really, I mean, it tore me up when he started talking about it's like the missing limb syndrome after you have an amputation.
Yeah.
When he was talking about his daughter 3 and 4 years afterwards going, you don't ever get over the fact of wondering, well, why aren't they where they are supposed to be?
They're supposed to be here. They're not. It's missing limb is the perfect way to put it.
Yeah, and I hear that and go, how do you continue to move forward?
Right.
And so, yeah, let's bring some notice then to this fact that there's survivors. There's 150,000 of them. What are we going to do? You know, well, we're going to offer as best as we can the psychotherapy and counseling that we can to help this and help that stop. And we're going to bring notification. In Florida, I know for a fact, right there, they have not stopped since the Parkland, Florida, offering counseling in multiple areas of the city of Parkland.
Which is amazing.
Right.
Just it's amazing. Right.
But it's not enough.
No.
And so this brings me to the point of going, so what treating PTSD, when are we going to treat the cause of PTSD? It's a question that I want to ask. I don't know that you know the answer.
I don't know if anyone knows the answer.
But it's something that I think that we really want to push. And in fact, when we come back to the news, our next story, maybe they're going to offer us a way out of this mess.
From GQ.com, New Zealand needed 6 days to ban military-style firearms for good. Last Friday, an avowed white supremacist wielding an assault rifle burst into two Christchurch mosques during afternoon prayers, murdering 50 people in what is far and away the worst terrorist attack in New Zealand's history. On Thursday, so less than a week later, Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern announced a nationwide ban on military-style semi-automatic weapons and high-capacity magazines, which she expects to be fully implemented by mid-April. Our history changed forever, she said, and now our laws will too.
Less than a week. So mass shooting in New Zealand and mass shooting machines are banned.
Done.
Okay. So this is, and now people are going to say, well, we're not New Zealand and we can't ever do that. But we need to ask questions about why could a country move that quickly? Mm-hmm. People are going to say, well, it's New Zealand. You know, they're crazy for some reason. Nobody has no idea, right?
But I don't think people could point out where
right.
New Zealand is.
Somebody might go, isn't that where they filmed Lord of the Rings
right,
or something like that?
Exactly.
Okay. Very rural country, very much a hunting country.
Yes.
Okay. Like to hunt.
They do.
Have guns.
There's okay? a lot of guns in New Zealand. A
lot of guns in New Zealand. Lots of people. But the idea of the semi-automatic weapons after this type of shooting? No.
Done.
No more. Done. Mm-hmm. When you read deeply into the GQ article, though, too, it's like somebody's going to say, well, it must be that they're controlled by a bunch of liberals. Or something like their government is a far
one-sided. Yeah.
And nope. It's across the far left party all the way to their far right party, which, mm-hmm. believe it, in another country, they have far lefts and far rights, too.
Not just us.
All of them are like, nope, sounds like a good idea. Let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
5 days. Done. And in fact, they're already putting the plans in place that if you happen to own one of these guns, please come down to your local police station. They'll buy it back from you.
It,
you actually
right.
get some money,
mm-hmm.
okay, and then they'll do away with it. After that, if you still have that gun, you're breaking the law.
Yeah.
And they're going to come after you, okay? So there's action, okay? Why can't America do that? Between us, why? Why can't we do that? When I look at the father from Sandy Hook, who tried over and over again to get gun legislation and failed to even get background checks.
Mm-hmm.
Background check. Okay. 20 first graders were killed and you couldn't get a background check out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It makes me wonder, too, to see how fast New Zealand acted like that for this father to witness that, how that contributes to how he must be feeling. How does this, all those 150,000 we talked about in the last news story,
right.
shooting survivors, are looking now at New Zealand who went, 5 days later, no more. No more. And how many people are asking questions? Wait, what do you mean we can't do this? What is it? What's wrong with our country? What's the Second Amendment? Well, is it the Second Amendment or is it the NRA lobby or is it? We don't know. We've got insanity when it comes to our guns because I hunt, you hunt. Mm-hmm. I'm perfectly fine. I have no fear that not being allowed to buy a 30 clip semi-automatic killing machine is going to take away my hunting rights. So, you know what? Let's treat PTSD. Let's help these survivors. Please, let's not have any more suicide. But let's also look to New Zealand and other places that are willing to make the hard choices.
We are Busting Pencils!
It was over a year ago at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School when a student opened fire on his classmates and teachers, killing 17. A week after the shooting, Rosemary Jensen, a parent of a student that survived the shooting, joined me to talk about that horrible day. Today, Rosemary is back to talk about the current sad reality in Parkland, Florida. Rosemary, thanks for coming back to Busted Pencils.
Sure.
Well, okay, let's start. So your son, Connor, was a student at that time and thank God survived. How's he doing?
He's actually doing really well. He's away at school at the University of Arizona. And honestly, I think it was really good for him to be away from here. It really gave him a fresh start, a path to look forward, to start really planning his future.
Right.
And not to be kind of immersed in, I don't know, just the feeling, the oppressiveness of being here. So, he's doing well.
Yeah, and he looks like he's great pictures on Facebook. He looks happy as can be in Arizona.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a dry heat now that he has to get used to, not the Florida wet heat, right?
Right. Well, actually, it's been really cold. It snowed there when he got back in January, so he was loving it.
Oh, well, there you go again. No evidence for global warming. Okay.
Exactly.
Well, it's awesome that Connor's there, but I mean, you're still there, and I mean, we're talking today now. Because, you know, the sad reality is that this isn't over, and we were reminded horribly this week with two Parkland students committing suicide. And there's everything on the press, and we're looking at this, and we're talking about it. But, I mean, what's it like living there a year and a half later? Or not?
It's it's hard to explain to people who aren't here. People just don't move on. Time does not heal all wounds. And unfortunately, you have to drive by the school every day. And the kids who have to walk into that school every day still have the reminder the building is still there. As it gets further away, I think now what we're seeing is a lot of post-traumatic stress disorder among the kids. And I think, you know, in the aftermath when people were very much, supporting each other and the kids had this focus on the March for Our Lives movement and, you know, had actions planned, I think it kept them kind of focused and not dealing with the reality of what really happened. And of course you don't know what triggers are going to trigger you until they actually show up. Things like helicopters overhead, lots of sirens. And like I've told people, you know, the middle school kids who moved up think it's really funny to drop books in the middle of the class.
See that when you and I talked about this interview, that was one of the most horrible things that you told me that, I mean, the students are themselves in one way, you know, playing what's, you know, seems like, okay, just traditional fun. But the idea of, quote, dropping a book for students who went through this, you know, talks about, it seems very similar when I hear veterans talking about, you know, the triggers.
Right.
And even you, I mean, this was so clear from last year during the interview, how you talked about the helicopters that day and how you couldn't get them out of your head. And to this day, that's a trigger for you.
It is big time. The helicopters overhead just you know, make me lose my mind. And it's not just me, it's everybody. It'll be one of those things where there'll be a lot of helicopters, and immediately on Facebook, the locals are like, what's going on? Why, you know, why are they here? Blah, 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 blah. And, you know, it usually takes the mayor or city commissioner who may know why they're overhead or, you know, what they're here for, or someone will say, well, this is happening on this street, or, you know, just recently, you know, when we had the anniversary, you know, all the news crews came back and, you know, there was a lot of media around again.
Right.
So those are the kinds of things that kind of set people off. And I think, again, you know, there's really, you know, the problem is when people are outside of this and aren't here, and people have to understand this city is very small. So, you know, when we found out that Sydney died by suicide, I mean, those of us who've been here 20-some years, at the time when there was one elementary school, we all know each other. Our kids were all in classes together. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we still are only a 3 elementary school, you know, city, 1 middle school, 1 high school. Everybody knows each other. So it really impacted everybody. Everybody, you know, teachers who had Sydney in elementary school, mm-hmm. you know, were reaching out to me, you know, what is going on? We don't know. I mean, obviously, yeah. There was, you know, you just don't know because these kids. And let me tell you this. Mm-hmm. She was very kind. She had lots of support. I know the yoga teacher at school had helped her get her certification because she's been teaching yoga locally. And I, you know, for that particular teacher, very traumatic. You know, this was all very, you know, it was stunning. It's stunning.
Sure.
You know, and I don't think people really get that we're not okay.
I think about what you just said here, and okay, so it's been over a year, the shooting, and mm-hmm. now we're dealing with people are like, geez, they're still dealing with it, because we get reminded by the press, you know, blowing
oh, yeah.
in our face the pictures of
mm-hmm.
Sydney and the other
right.
boy who commits suicide,
right.
and all of a sudden
right.
we have to remember this. But then you talk about, you know, the people then who were associated with Sydney and her
right.
yoga instructor, and now the
right.
devastation
right.
of the suicide on the yoga instructor.
Right.
And it's that type of, you know, for me, the press sensationalizes the suicide.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And doesn't right. let us get into the world of saying what is happening. And when you and I talked, you know, a couple mm-hmm. days ago about this, you know, there, you've said since that day, there's been counseling available.
Yes, it was immediate. I'm one of the parents who, you know, when they said come back, because I volunteered in guidance answering phones for 7 years. So we went back. We were trained on if parents call about mental health counseling, or, you know, their student is having an issue, you know, these are the numbers that were we have a number here, 211 through Broward County, that will, you know, that will match people up privately to mental health professionals. They will come, you know, they would come to your home. We had them immediately on campus at all times in the media center. The kids were able to go at any time mm-hmm. that they needed to go. We had mental health counselors coming, signing into the school to meet with students in private rooms, you know, because people say, oh, kids won't. No, they were coming. We had a group of moms and dads that set up immediately. It was called the Resiliency Center. It's still here. And we all donated couches and games and everything so kids could go meet after school. There were anybody in the city. It could have been anybody. Parents could go meet with mental health counselors, do group counseling there. In the meantime, there was another center that was just set up, and I can't remember. It wasn't supposed to open until April 29th, but in light of what happened, they've opened their doors. It's in a plaza in between an ice cream store and a fitness center, hoping that people will see it mm-hmm. and will walk in. The thing of it is they have, you know, this school board and everybody has tried so hard to get help to these kids. I think my concern from the get-go was the teachers were asked to come back the day after the last funeral happened. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that they got the help they need or that they do, because I'm hearing a lot. Teachers are struggling Our football coach is leaving. He resigned. I don't know if that came up. That was kind of nationwide on ESPN because his office sat between Coach Feist's office and our AD, Coach Chris. So he said he just can't take it anymore. He can't walk in. And I think all the teachers came back this year, you know, just to support the kids. But I think we're not even talking about the PTSD they're dealing with.
Yeah, the teachers, right. It's where, you know, we're talking about this, and we come back to this PTSD Yeah, when you talked to me about that, it was like, yeah, we forgot about the teachers that have to put on this straight face, supposedly, and act.
Right.
And that's not real.
No, it's not.
It's not healthy. It's not healthy there. And then, right after with the teens in your neighborhood, and then we hear of the Sandy Hook father.
I know. Well, I liken it to me, and I'm, very clear-headed today, but, in the last week, it was very much, I'm so angry because New Zealand acted immediately, and we can't do anything. We can't do anything to change anything. Doesn't matter how awful the massacre is or who it impacts or who the victims are. We don't change a thing. And I know for me, the despair was so great last week that why can't we do anything? And in our state right now, there's legislation going through. It's House Bill 7070 that wants to arm teachers.
Arm teachers.
And the state, the majority of people in the state, it's something like 77% of the calls that came in were against. Doesn't matter. They're right. Going through. It's going to happen. And people here are just, what people also don't know is in this community, it's a very kind of divided community. You have people who are very like, lock it down, make it a prison. We need more guns in schools. And then you have those mostly, I would say, are against it. But the voices for are so loud, and they will call you out, and they will demean you on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And it's to the point that, you can't even, I don't belong to any local groups because the ugly is so bad. And what you don't also see is now, there was such a fight about the school board race, and it was nasty. And now, they removed all the admin before Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and then, so the kids, here's all this disruption of people who, now they're placing blame on them, and then just before last week, they removed the principal.
Mm-hmm.
And, he wasn't even there that day, but the kids love him. He cares about the kids, and he brought these kids back to school, and he's led them through, and out of the blue, he gets removed. So there's all this disruption, and that disruption became very ugly in the community for people who supported the principal and those who, want him to basically, I can't even tell you how ugly it is.
We are talking to Rosemary Jensen. Rosemary's son Connor was in the Parkland, Florida shooting last year, luckily survived, is doing great in Arizona. But Rosemary is talking to us now, though, that this after effect that horribly was thrust into the news with the suicide of two students who PTSD, survivor's guilt, you put it out there. But we were talking, though, about the fact now, the blame mm-hmm. that's going around. And you were leaving off with talking about the principal who wasn't even there that day
mm-hmm.
has been dismissed. And my question is, for what?
We don't really know. This is what I was combing and, and our superintendent, who I had a second of compassion for him, but after this I don't, who goes on and says, we really didn't have a code red policy in place, but it was really up to the principals to make sure there was one, and he didn't have one, which was a lie, because I brought it up on Facebook. I went and I pulled the screenshots from January of last year, because Connor came home to talk about the code red drills. And the question kept coming up was, I didn't ask my teachers, what if you're in a bathroom and a code red is called? So I threw it up on Facebook to see if other people had gotten at it. So they were doing them, and I kept posting because my husband thought it was absolutely ridiculous because we all thought it would never happen here. Mm-hmm. But Connor will tell you to this day, he feels like the reason there weren't more casualties was because, and he'll say it, his words, we had a protocol, we knew what to do, we did it, and that's why it wasn't worse than it was. He'll say that all day long. Hmm. So now the superintendent's blaming the principal. And, you know, I've heard rumors in the community that there's parents out here. And listen, I'm fortunate. My son lived. There are people who don't have their children. So they have righteous anger. And, you know, I understand, you know, someone has to get blamed, but there's a lot of misdirected anger, and what's not being considered are the kids who survived, who have to walk back into that school every day and deserve stability, deserve support, deserve as normal a high school experience as they can. They shouldn't feel guilty. They shouldn't, you know, be punished for surviving, and they should get all the support. So all this, like, we're going to take everybody out, you know, because that makes us all feel good, mm-hmm. you know, makes us, someone's got to pay, although the kid that needs to pay still, you know, is sitting in jail and no one's focused on that trial because God only knows when that's going to happen. You know, it's all misplaced anger at this point. And the community is so divided and it's not helping our kids. But bottom line, the kids are the ones who are caught in this. So it's not right.
Of course, the kids, the teacher, the principal, mm-hmm. and as you just said, the blame. Yeah. But now, you know, for me, that goes back, and you mentioned this in the first segment, you know, mm-hmm. with New Zealand. I mean, we got to look and can somebody, you know, ask the question and go, okay, so first of all, it's a lie that there were no code red drills. You have mm-hmm. evidence your son went yeah. through it, so the kids were prepared. But the reality of being prepared for this, as you said, it's never going to happen here. But, you know, why blame the principal? Why blame a kid? Why blame somebody? What the hell? Why can we not blame the gun?
The gun and the person who was able to buy it and the mother who allowed him to buy it and all that, you know, this is, again, to me, this is a gun that's very easily taken out of commission. And I actually had dinner on Saturday night with a resident of New Zealand, a citizen, who said to us, she's like, you know, in our country, she said, I didn't know this until the shooting happened, but we have the largest per capita gun ownership in the world. She said, because, you know, we're largely rural and people hunt. She goes, but when this happened, she said, 50 people in New Zealand is comparable to maybe like 3,500 people in, you know, here. Mm. She's like, so for us, the impact was so great that people were like, yeah, we don't want this to happen again, and are very willing to give up those kind of guns because you still are allowed to hunt. You mm-hmm. still have hunting guns and handguns, but there are some things that we can all agree on. And to me, mass killing, machines that are made to kill mass amounts of people in short periods of time are not something people need to have in their possession because it's not for hunting. It's not, you know, it's not.
It's what you just said. It's a killing machine. Most specifically,
right.
It's made to kill people.
People.
You know, we did a news story last week on Busted Pencils about, you know, again, all this is running together, but how Sandy Hook was just granted the ability by an appeals court to go after Remington.
Right.
Because specifically the marketing of that gun used in Newtown said mm-hmm. it was to kill your enemy.
Right.
You know, and so this idea that it was, well, hey, it was a hunting gun and we shouldn't take away mm-hmm. hunting guns. It's like, no, this was a killing machine. But this, you know, it's I think that, though, when I look at, you know, the father in Newtown and the amount of time and effort and all of the great things he did. And if you read about it, it's amazing what he did. But that constant being told, you know, no, we're not going to get rid of guns. You know, idiots out there, these ridiculous people, the Alex Jones, the deniers mm-hmm. and things like that. It's just toxicity. And so why I really wanted to do this show was to bring this back up so that we can talk about this because, you know what, therapy is great. PTSD, we need to do everything we can to treat people so that we can mm-hmm. take care of these issues. But what about when we start talking about, again, why are we going to continue to let this happen?
That's, you know, to me, everyone just says this is, you know, this is our new normal and that we're going to do code red drills monthly here. So, it you know, we're terrorizing children but at five. To, you know, we got to hide from someone who might shoot you.
Well, that's what I mean. You're setting into, I wonder how many children just going through code reds, and I've heard this, and actually my daughter who's had to go through a couple, you know, she's talking about this as if, you know, they're starting to get to a point, and I don't want to say they're not taking it seriously because they just now see these as fire drills. They're actually harmful during the day and disruptive during the day to the mind because it creates in a child's mind this possibility of being killed.
Well, in our state, they have to tape hard corners in the room. So now you have these yellow and black, you know, or red tape on the floor. So you know where, and they're there all the time. So you know where to hide behind. Mm. I mean, we have lost our collective minds.
Right.
I mean, we really, really have.
We're spending all of this time on that. You know, so code red drills, we're putting tape on the ground. In Indiana last week, we went around shooting teachers with plastic bullets, you know, and like as if that's not traumatic. And now those teachers are going to do that. You know, we're going to spend a whole bunch of money. I sent you an article here in Wisconsin, you know, our state union, the Wisconsin Education Association, you know, in combination with law enforcement and everybody, you know, are patting themselves on the back for pushing forward this mental health screening, but they're framing it as a preventative to gun violence, where it's like, you know what, I don't know that we have any real evidence that mental health being offered in schools is would have or did or has stopped anybody from a mass shooting. That's not to say, hey, guess what? You know what? Mental health services in all schools at all times, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
But
that would be nice.
But to put it in the place of saying, look, we're doing something for school shootings. I don't see that you're doing anything for school shootings except maybe ramping up even more anxiety with more kids as you remind them that they've got counseling services or counseling available. There's tape in the back of the room. There's code reds. And by the way, if one little student in the back says, can we just do what they did in New Zealand?
Right.
I'm waiting for that, you know, one kid to say, why can't we do what they did in New Zealand?
Well, they're kind of saying that here, many of our kids. And see, but the problem is, you know, here's the issue. You still have all these, and it's people here. It's people here because I know the people posting. They live in my city, or I've known them, and they post on Sun Sentinel or the local paper, and they, like, malign our kids. They malign our March for Our Lives kids. Like, these kids are, you know, the stuff that you hear said about them, you know, is unbelievable. There was a rant that went around on Facebook locally because a lot of people were saying, well, why would she Sydney have PTSD? She wasn't in the building. Like, this is a narrative here. Well, the kids who weren't in the building somehow, you know, shouldn't be upset, you know, except for the fact that, you know, they heard everything.
Right.
They lost friends. They, you know, they saw things they shouldn't, like Connor, you know, when they busted down the closet door, they were looking down the barrel of guns, you know, like this is what many of these kids saw. So, you know, this is a new narrative, and you have people all across the country who come on these boards and malign our kids who say these things, you know, as, you know, crisis actors, same thing that they did to all the Newtown parents, but when you see adults, and I understand that the father was here. He spoke at FAU, which is only 20 minutes from here. I was just there yesterday.
Yeah, when you told me that he was the Parkland father,
there.
I mean, the Newtown father was here, was at Parkland a week ago talking about this.
Yeah. And so Sydney happened Saturday. I think he was here right after that, like a couple days later. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, the despair that and the helplessness that I feel, you know, even in the state, is overwhelming. The fact that this happened here after Pulse happened here, after the yoga studio shooting, after the airport shooting, all in the last year, that we couldn't change the way the state operates, it's very despairing. I don't know how the parents, and like I said, the feeling here is very much, it's just a very kind of dark, kind of weird, aftermath. Everybody's watching their kids. It's not, and that's what I keep saying. Everybody's watching their kids. Everybody's worried about their kids. You know, everybody is seeing PTSD happen in their kids in different ways here. So, you know,
I don't know. And thank goodness we are going to muster as many resources as we possibly can to help deal with that. But my God, can we put in a quarter of the effort to muster some form of gun control? Rosemary, you know, I really appreciate you taking the time, because it's the story that's not being told that we've always wanted to do on Busted Pencils, and have people get a sense. And, you know, maybe somebody says, you know what? Yeah, maybe we can do something. You know, this is unacceptable, that PTSD treatment. You know, we just have to accept school shootings. No, we don't.
We shouldn't.
And, you know, for you, for all the families down there, I mean, please continue to take care. Reach out to us whenever you can. And, you know, hey, and I know your daughter's in town, so go have a great rest of the day with your daughter.
Well,
Rosemary Jensen, Parkland, Florida. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you. I'm so lucky. Like, I am so lucky. And thank you for reaching out to me when you know, it meant the world to me a year ago, and it still does, and people are thinking about us, because it's not over. So thank you. Thank you for doing this.
How many walls can you
Hey, this is Tim from Rise Against here on Busted Pencils Radio.
We are now ready for Educated Educators Talking Education with my colleague Joanna Rosado. Joanna, how are you?
I'm great.
Hey, so tough show this week. I just finished interviewing a mother. Her son survived the school shooting in Parkland. And, you know, we see the news now where there two of the surviving students also now have committed suicide. The father from Newtown committed suicide, and all we keep hearing about is prevention of the post-traumatic stress, and there's all these things. But first of all, as a classroom teacher, since all of these school shootings, has your life changed? Do you do things differently? Do you see your job differently based on school shootings?
Yeah, of course. But a lot of it is because I'm kind of really reminded of it externally. A lot of things within the schools have changed in terms of, you know, the securing of campuses, you know, in terms of buzzing in, or what's called the Raptor system, which is like a photo ID system.
It sounds so comforting, the Raptor system.
Right. And right, I know that is used to kind of process so we know who's in our buildings. And yet I kind of wonder if that might deter some of our parents, if how they feel about that. I don't know. But so definitely, yeah, I've felt changes in kind of the external structural. There's definitely a heightened awareness. I think we do fire drills differently now, where we kind of really know that they're happening in advance. I feel it from the kids that if anything is called, like sometimes a lockdown might be called like due to a medical emergency, you know, but you don't know that, you know, so like we might do that kind of, we might do a lockdown because you want to transport somebody with dignity. But kids really, anytime there's any kind of lockdown drill, students get nervous. They really look to you to be like, what's going on? And then I find myself being more nervous if I don't know what's going on.
Right.
Well,
think about that. Yeah.
So what
you just said there, that nervousness, and in fact, you know, as we're talking about, as schools adapt to, and I hate people who say, well, this is just the new reality. You know, you're supposed to be feeling safer, and I hear my daughter saying, you know, these active shooter drills make her feel less safe because that reminds her that these are things that could happen. And then, you know, we just looked at the news in Indiana, where Indiana went beyond the pale with an active shooter drill where they actually shot teachers with plastic bullets.
And I'm talking to you, and you're like, wait a minute, I have a substitute teacher friend that actually went through something very similar. And, in fact, he's sitting there with you right now. Duvang, welcome to Busted Pencils.
Hi, thank you.
So you went through this kind of, now this isn't at the Milwaukee Public Schools, but wherever you were, you went through an active shooter type of drill where projectiles were fired at you. Is that true?
Correct. So I went through the ALICE training.
Okay.
And this took place during a PD day. So this was announced, and we took time out of the PD day.
Which is professional development.
Correct. Professional development day. We took about 3 or 4 hours in the afternoon to actually go through simulations, multiple simulations of an active shooter, which was the local sheriff, who came through with an airsoft gun. And we had to figure out how to escape him and not get shot by his airsoft gun. And I was one of the few who actually did get shot during the simulations.
Hmm.
So it was very traumatic.
I was going to say, what, I mean, okay, so how's that mean? You were shot. Now, granted, it's an airsoft, but how does that, what does that do to you? Does it prepare you to be a better in this situation?
During the time, like, looking back at it, it definitely doesn't. You're basically put in a classroom with a bunch of other educators, and you're trying to escape this active shooter, and all you could think about is, like, you freeze. Mm. And all I did was froze, and it felt very visceral, and I still can see see that, and I had no reaction to what to do or how to react, and it's traumatizing.
Well, and Tim, the reason it was, you know, uncanny how you and I had been talking, and then I had just heard the story. Du and I have been friends, and I had never heard the story until about a week ago from him, and he was explaining to some students of why he's no longer a teacher.
Yeah, you're a substitute teacher now, so, I mean, yeah, Joanna, thanks for bringing that up. I mean, what happened? I mean, you made a decision to change your life.
Yeah, going to these trainings, the ALICE training, and also just the evacuations and the school that I was at, getting threats, it was just too much for me, and it was traumatizing, and it essentially drove me out of the profession. It was one of the big driving forces, but of that one definitely took a toll on my mental health, I would say.
Yeah, I think when we were talking, he explained how, and again, we know these are being done with the intentions of helping people.
Mm-hmm.
But similar to what you say your daughter said, he felt that it planted the seed of, like, all these scenarios, you
right.
know, and that schools were large places with lots of people and not many exits, and that then he began to see that and be uncomfortable with that. And then ultimately, as a 25-year-old, feeling like, wow, I do want to be a teacher, but I really don't know if the part you told me about.
Yeah, like being the savior of 30 students who are very close in age with me as well, and being connected with them, and if I was to ever let one down or not be able to save all of them, it's just too much. It's a huge weight to bear as a 25-year-old or as a human being. That it's just a scary thought, and it became more and more real when these simulations were enacted and became very raw.
I want to, you know, because we're talking about this, and it's like all of this is reactionary to the school shooting. And one of the things that I want to come back to is that, so this active shooter drill, quote, doesn't prevent an active shooter. It actually assumes an active shooter. You know, PTSD mental health sessions are for after shootings and things like that. What about preventing? Now, Joanna, you said something about the Raptor system and stuff like that, but I want to ask the question, though, why is gun control not part of the solution?
Well, I think that's kind of an obvious question that those of us who feel that we're kind of sitting targets do wonder. Where is the will to just, instead of prepare kids as though this is going to happen, where is the political will to ensure that we're going to do everything we can so that it doesn't happen? I don't have the answer for that. And it's even something myself that it is hard for me to think about. It is something that I kind of push out of my mind.
Hey, Dude, what about you? I mean, does it cross your mind to say, why don't we just get rid of the guns?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's just a huge discourse around the ideas of having teachers prepared and all this discussions about mental health and institutions around and mental health, and not actually the bigger issue here is banning assault rifles or having stricter gun laws in the U.S. And this is just a way to deter the general public from the idea of what is actually affecting the public health of the United States.
Yeah, look, I mean, look at New Zealand. You know, 6 days later, sorry, no more guns, assault rifle.
No, that's so incredible. I mean, it really is incredible to hear that, and yet then very depressing.
It's very depressing because then you look at the father who killed himself from Newtown, who at one point lamented in an article that, I mean, they couldn't even get background checks after Sandy Hook happened.
Right.
You know, and then and instead the response is, like you said, so we're going to install Raptor systems, we're going to have active shooter drills, and then we're going to take young teachers like Dew, and then we're going to put them in a room, and we're going to have a big sheriff, and then we're going to come in, and we're going to shoot at you. This just marks to me the insanity of how we're actually approaching the reality of saying, yeah, but maybe that person shouldn't have a gun.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I would also say that it's not informed by what would really be best for helping children feel protected and safe. Like, this isn't informed by, like, child development, psychology, understanding of, you know, trauma. You know, those things I'd be interested in hearing and signing on with, you know, for schools to do.
Right.
But I just, I'm aware that I don't really know that those things are informed by what's best for kids, or if it's coming from the place of, do we think that it's important to make sure schools are safe havens for children mentally and physically?
Yeah. Well, I put on Facebook last night, I'm perfectly fine with mental health all the time for all kids. The act that we're going to use mental health screening as a preventative to school shootings is kind of, there's really not a whole lot of, as you just said, informed research that works. And, you know, back to looking at the problem, you know, when I read this that happened in Indiana, I was like, my God, they lost their marbles. And then, Joanna, you tell me, wait, I already know someone who went through it too, where we're actually shooting people. And so I just look at the insanity of what we've done. You know, we have survivors. There's over 150,000 school shooting survivors since Columbine. And
really?
Yeah, that statistic, we found that earlier. And so it just, look at the trauma that we're inflicting, continuing to inflict on children in, quote, the name of safety and protecting them, when what we really need to do is to find some people with some courage to actually really protect teachers and children. And let's do common sense gun laws, no assault rifles, get rid of bump stocks. My goodness, a background check. I have to have a background check to drive my car. At this point, though, Joanna, Dew, thank you for sharing. And Dew, you know what? I am so sorry you had to go through something like that. I appreciate that you came on the show to tell people that this insanity is real, that you went through this, and because of it, the trauma now pushed you out of teaching. Guys, Joanna, Dew, thanks for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Tim.
Time now for our weekly salute to legendary historian and activist Howard Zinn. This is your moment of Zinn.
They have the guns. We have the poets. Therefore, we will win.
My thanks to Rosemary Jensen, Joanna Rosato, Du Vang, and New Zealand. I'm Dr. Tim Slecker. Keep busting pencils.
Log on to BustedPencils.com for the latest trending news, blogs, past shows, and more. Subscribe to our podcast in iTunes and Google Play. And get daily updates by following us on Facebook and Twitter at Busted Pencils. This is Fully Leaded Education Talk. Busted Pencils Radio.